Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. We'll have Kent Summers today dropping on in. Kent has a new book out, first and foremost, 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, for those of you on the stream. I have the book right here, and yeah, it's well done. There was 100 things they should have done yesterday against the Saints. We'll get into that with Kent. Cardinal insider, 20 years plus on covering this team. And what happened again yesterday is Team Nothing continues to go about their business. That's with Kent Summers. We'll have news and notes with Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist. She'll join us via Skype for her weekly segment. Actually, I had the pleasant Saturday night at Paula's home with her family, her husband, and they made lasagna. Eric, have you been to a Paula lasagna dinner?
Yes, yeah. I have several times. It's not Paula lasagna. It's Paula's mom's
Mom's lasagna. Now, there's a thing about lasagna that I am somewhat picky about.
Okay.
And there was nothing to be picky about on Saturday night. There's some very good wine and very good lasagna. There just wasn't enough of it. And Paula was getting anxious because people were just cutting in front of me, including my wife. So we'll talk with Paula.
Sounds like a personal problem around the holidays.
Could be. Could very well be. The Cardinal game. So I was not in a good mood by the time the game ended yesterday because of the fact that defensively the Cardinals, when the announcers, when Chris Myers and Rondae Barber are doing your game, that's not Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I get it. And it's not a slight towards them. It's just where they are in the pecking order. We've heard Chris Myers, though, the last few weeks. It's kind of like there was a time where Sam Rosen was the guy doing every Cardinal game back in the day with Fox. And so far here, as the second half of the season has progressed and the Cardinals continue to go into the abyss, I hear about their defense being ranked and how great their defense is and what the ranking, what do the rankings show all of you? Okay. What is it that the rankings show all of you that we can make numbers look like anything? Okay. Numbers say, well, numbers may say, but the results don't say, you know, the results are just, man, you give up 48. I get it. It's the Saints, but it doesn't matter who it is. You give up 48 to anybody. And it felt like New Orleans was the only way that New Orleans was going to lose the game is if they stopped themselves because the Cardinals couldn't do it. I was a little under the weather yesterday. I was supposed to go to the game and it just didn't work out. And as I'm sitting in my office making notes about it, Drew Brees just completely tore the Cardinals up. I don't care that he tears other Cardinals apart or other teams apart. I don't care. All I care about is on a Sunday for a team that was in the NFC Championship game, that was telling everybody how great they're going to be, that all or nothing was going to come along, and that fans are going to get excited in July and August, and there's going to be premieres and all that. And then you sit here at the end of the season, it's just an absolute embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. The upside, obviously, is what David Johnson continues to do. And I think the real question, I'm going to talk to Kent about this in a few minutes, is do they blow the thing up? Is the window of opportunity closed? It's like watching Dallas, right? So we watch Dak Prescott. He's a fresh, young face. And yeah, he's got a terrific running back behind him. I don't know. He's a terrific running back out here. Carson was pretty darn good yesterday. But when it goes for a quarterback, it goes in a hurry. And the window of opportunity for this team, you just subtracted a first-round pick at wide receiver. You know, Michael Floyd's no longer here, so now you have a gaping hole receiver. If Larry Fitzgerald decides that he doesn't want to be back next year, now you have a huge gaping hole receiver. And you've got to find that quarterback. And then the question is, which is of more importance? The offensive line has been a sieve. Yeah, injuries have been part of it, but lack of production has been another. I'm looking at this, and outside of David Johnson, the most impressive part about David Johnson is he's running against teams and running all over teams with a line that is not that good. He's doing it on his own. Not all the way through. That's not fair to the linemen that are out there, but it's not a great line. And then you look at the Cardinals on their defensive side of the football, And Calais had a big game yesterday, but if Calais is gone, then you're expecting Khimdiche to come in, and Khimdiche has played some yesterday. Doesn't matter, they played a lot, but it's another first-round pick that you're counting on who hasn't done anything this year. He's basically had a redshirt season. He's been on scholarship. And then you look at linebacker play, and you look in the secondary, and it's not like you have all the answers back there. And you gave Tyrann Mathieu a huge extension, and he's been hurt this season. He hasn't played up to what you would expect off somebody getting a huge extension. It's just very fair.
We had a trend broken yesterday, too.
What was that?
Up until yesterday, the Cardinals were one of three teams in the NFL not to allow a 300-yard passer.
Wow.
Drew Brees, 389 yesterday.
389. Okay, yep. So let me go off that stat then. When they played Russell Wilson, so let's go back to in October. Russell Wilson wasn't healthy. When they played the Patriots, they didn't have Jimmy Garoppolo, right? When they played the 49ers, the
they
49ers.
Did, they did have Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, they didn't have Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I know what you said. I gotcha.
No, I screwed up. Tannehill, they knocked out of the game, and it was wet and nasty conditions.
The 49ers don't have a quarterback. That's
Rams
two games.
Didn't have a quarterback.
Rams don't have a quarterback. That's two. That's one game
one
so
game.
Far.
So we're just going through. Does this sound like we're nitpicking, or does it sound like, no, you can take this stat and throw it anyway? Buffalo? Buffalo have a quarterback?
He played well.
He ran.
Tyrod Taylor.
He ran.
But they caught Jameis Winston in a good time early in the year when the Bucs were still sort of trying to find their footing. So
does it have everything to do with the fact that timing on the schedule and the teams that they played – and that they didn't face a whole lot of teams that were going to challenge them at that position.
The Vikings scored points in other ways, not via Sam Bradford passes for the most part.
Sure, in the Vikings.
Special teams and defense.
And look, when they played the Vikings, that was in mid-November, right? If you look at the second half of the season, remember when Philadelphia and Carson Wentz were like, what were they, 3-0 or 4-0? Remember when Minnesota, everybody was, oh my gosh, look at the Vikings and how great they're going to be. Those two teams stink. Those two teams now are not going to make the postseason. This is why you do not get too high off of how teams start in September. Yeah, you can lose it. I get it. But you don't get all wound up about a quick start. You just don't. The good teams show their consistency. You know, a team like Seattle, they threw Russell Wilson out there probably knowing that they weren't going to win games early in the year. He wasn't that good. And now late in the season, he's terrific. I guess I could tear that stat apart. They just haven't played very good quarterbacks. Or they're just not very many good quarterbacks in the league. Drew Brees throws for 300 yards. That's the ninth time this season that Drew Brees has thrown for that many yards. So that caught my eye. You know, outside of that, there was some basketball this weekend on the college front that was fine here locally. But I think everything revolves around what's going to happen moving forward with our hometown heroes on the football field. I mean, every football team here in the state this year has been bad. That's just a fact. The pro team has stunk. The college teams haven't been any good. So, and I include NAU in that. They weren't good. U of A wasn't good. ASU wasn't good. So this has been forgettable this year on the football field. Thank God for high schools. You know, thank God for some kids on college teams outside of the Valley that are playing well and played well nationally. Because, man, this has just been a train wreck. You know, we're probably going to hear about Chandler Catanzaro getting cut. So what? What's that do? They're already out of the playoffs. You know, I liked the shot yesterday of Carson Palmer going over and talking to him. Fox captured that. That was nice. It's not going to equate to more wins. Is he going to be back next year? You wouldn't think so. The special teams all season long, they use the word special. They haven't been good. Just call them teams. Just call them bad. Bad teams. The bad teams are on the field. Outside of one Britton Golden return yesterday, you guys tell me how many times does this team break loose? It just doesn't happen. So, and we don't need to do endless days upon this. Today, a Monday, sure, but I'm not going to sit here every day and say, well, if they just would have. No. No, I think the really interesting side of this is, will the Cardinals decide that they still have a window left that next year in 2017 they can turn this thing around? Because they do have the running back. If we want to point at Dallas, they do have the running back. But Dallas also has a hell of a good offensive line. Across the board, really good offensive line. Ken Summers is next, then Paula Bova News and Notes. We'll have Paula in about 15 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Kent has his book that is out, 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We'll talk about the team yesterday in his book, too. That's straight ahead. All right, Kent Summers is with us now as the Cardinals come off yet another loss, this time to the New Orleans Saints. Train wreck, team nothing, all or nothing, nothing. I mean, what's going to be the headline of the 2016 Cardinals now that
it will be nothing. Yeah, yeah. Nothing all, and then nothing will be in all caps and 60-point headlines. Such a disappointment, I think, from the beginning when they did the all or nothing show on Amazon and they talked championship and people talked championship and the Cardinals didn't do anything to say, hey, you know, let's pump the brakes on this a little bit. It's a new season.
I heard Arians was a little hesitant about doing this.
Yeah, he had to be talked into it. Michael Bidwell was the one who was really on board with this early and who pushed it. And, of course, when the boss pushes something, you tend to listen. I don't think a lot of the football people were anxious to do it. I think once they got into it, they worked well with the NFL Films people and thought it was good for people to see behind the scenes and sort of what went into the organization. But given the disappointment of the season, it's easy to look back and say, okay, look, this team was so full of itself, read too many press clippings, watched too many movies of themselves.
I think you and I talked about this in the offseason. You got to turn the page. And we will never see a Hard Knocks now after this, right? We will never see anything like this again because of what happened this year, do you think? Or is it just too tempting for all the publicity and all the notoriety and try to get people revved up?
Yeah, I think it's – I mean, Bruce Arians has never been on board with this kind of thing. He doesn't really want people to see behind the scenes, I think, and how he coaches. And he certainly didn't want to see people to see him cutting players, yelling at players, coaching hard in practice, which he does. But I think it'll be a while before you see the Cardinals do anything like this again.
All right, biggest question is you're sitting here. There's a couple games left, I know, but a biggest question now facing the franchise – moving forward is, in your opinion?
The overarching question is, how many changes do you make? If you're Steve Keim, do you think this is sort of an aberration? We lost three games because of special teams gaffes. We're not that far away. Don't blow the whole thing up. Or do you sit back and say,
the window's closed.
The window's closed.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen, they're going to say, we've got one more year into this. Carson Palmer will be back. The other question I have, will Larry Fitzgerald be back? He's been on the fence. I've thought all along that this could be his last season. He could retire, even though he signed the extension in August. I think part of the motivation for that was that people wouldn't ask him about it all year long, retirement.
Kurt Warner told me on the air 3 weeks ago, he's done. This is it. He still believes he's done. And that's a pretty good person to say he's done. He thinks the injuries have taken their toll. From a production standpoint, you know, fumble aside yesterday, he could still play.
He could still play. I mean, I think he can play in the role they have him in. Could they get him the ball more at times during the season? Of course. But, you know, he's not a guy who has ever been able to have the speed to get tremendous separation, and I think that's diminished somewhat already. The thing with Larry, and he's told me the same thing, how much does he want to put his body and mind through to play again? The mental grind, the physical grind. I mean, he sat down in his front of his locker last Thursday and said, I feel every bit of 15 games into the season, I feel every bit of 33 years old right now. Does he want to keep doing this, especially a guy who has so many outside interests?
Okay, Calais Campbell, he's gone?
He's gone, yeah. If they were going to have Calais Campbell back, they would have made the move right now. And I think Calais is young enough, turns 31 in September, that somebody's going to give him $9, $10 million a year, and it's not going to be the Cardinals.
Michael Floyd, did they handle it the right way in your view?
It's interesting, without knowing what went on behind the scenes. I think it's a dangerous message or precedent to set to cut a player right after he gets in trouble, because we all know if Michael Floyd would have been having a great season, that probably wouldn't have happened. If this team had 8, 9, 10 wins, probably wouldn't happen. If that were Patrick Peterson or David Johnson in trouble, that would not happen. But Michael Bidwell on the pregame show on the Cardinals Network on Sunday said, look, we tried to work with this, and basically said some of the things Michael told us weren't checking out. And also implied that he wasn't working hard enough, training hard enough, that maybe some off-field things were affecting his performance on the field. And basically Michael Bidwell said, I didn't hear any remorse from Michael Floyd, so we just decided, well, we'll cut our losses. And in the process, they save about $1 million, both in cash and off the cap, because the Patriots picked him up.
Bruce Arians, Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, the narrative is they're all tied together. When they leave, they're all going to leave together. You buy into that?
To an extent, I don't know if I put Larry Fitzgerald in that trio. I think Arians and Palmer could be. I think Arians would like to leave this team with a young heir apparent quarterback and develop somebody. But I do think Arians and Palmer are tied together. Arians said at the first spring when they traded for Carson Palmer, we're old Cowboys riding off into the sunset. Palmer was like, I'm not old. You're old. I'm not old. But now 37, turns 37. This week, I think he's probably feeling every bit of it. But I think both of those guys will be back one more year. I think they'll try to keep the nucleus of this together one more year.
Okay, so Arians' health, being in the hospital twice this year, to you, do you have to look at that and tilt the head sideways and say, maybe he walks away from this at the end of the season? Or is there no doubt in your mind that he's back next year?
At this point, there's no doubt in my mind that he's back next year. He doesn't want to end it like this. Health scares, I think the second one must have been a little scarier than the first. Mm-hmm. The diverticulitis, the inflammation of the colon was something that he had dealt with for a while. They knew immediately what it was. The chest pains or discomfort that he felt later in the year, that had to be more concerning. His wife, Christine, I think, obviously like any of our wives, I hope, would be really concerned if we got sick.
Wife might help throw the dirt,
She would like to, obviously see what the stress relief was.
Yeah.
But he always says, hey, you've got to find some way to let all this out, and I do. I hope for his sake, he'll be 65. I hope for his sake that, he spends off season getting in shape and realize all those hours in the office can take a toll, and I think all coaches need to take better care of themselves.
Mm. You and I were at the combine last year, and I remember walking away from a media session. You and I were just chatting about stuff, and the quarterback was one of the things that wasn't addressed again last offseason. And it feels like again and again and again. Is this offseason the heir apparent, as you alluded to a little bit earlier? Is this going to be the offseason? Because Carson is diminished. His numbers are good. He didn't play poorly against the Saints.
No, he played really well.
He played really well. Probably one of his best games of the season. But at some point, unless Drew Stanton clearly is the guy to them, and I don't think he is, you got to do something here, Kent.
No question. You look at how they've handled Carson this year. He started off the year under throwing deep balls, not sharp. And then a few weeks into the season, they start giving him Wednesdays off, and it's half a day Thursday. The arm strength improved. So I thought all along, something's up with the shoulder, the arm, whatever. So they've already gone into a maintenance program. So you've got to get somebody else in here. I think this is a year that, in the past, they've passed on a Teddy Bridgewater late in the first round. They've passed on a Derek Carr in the second round. I think this is the year you've really got to look hard at taking somebody fairly high in the draft and not rely on, okay, we're going to take a shot on a fourth rounder. We're going to trade for Matt Barkley and see what he's got. We're going to, get Zach Dysart and look at him. I think they've got to bring somebody in, a higher round pick.
Before Kent leaves, it's Christmas week, okay? So this means you need to go buy this for your Cardinal fans. 100 things Cardinal fans should know and do before they die. Kent wrote this. Larry did the forward on Larry Fitzgerald. And this is the week with Christmas on Sunday. This is your perfect stocking stuffer. Give me 30 seconds on this.
It was funny. At a book signing, a fan suggested I change this. According to this year, or way things have gone this year, 100 things they should know and do before they kill themselves. A lot of fun to do. The Cardinals haven't had a successful history, but it's been a long one and fascinating, moving from Chicago to St. Louis to Arizona. A lot of great stories along the way.
So you can pick this up and get it ordered this week. Kent Summers, appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Brad.
Always, back with more after this timeout. Paula Bovin will join us. News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist here in a bit. There's a few stories that caught my eye from the weekend. So the Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette story is starting to pick up a lot of steam today. And this one is not that easy. You've got Christian McCaffrey now saying that he is not going to play in Stanford's bowl game. He's going to focus on the NFL. You have Leonard Fournette of LSU not going to play in the bowl game, trying to get healthy. And I actually get this one. I don't believe that you can flat say they're wrong. They don't know what they're doing. I don't think you can punish these kids and pound on these kids for what they're deciding to do. This is a business decision. Just go Google Jalen Smith, linebacker of Notre Dame. Just go do it. Last year he plays in the bowl game and shreds himself, just gets shredded. And his career, his draft stock, he loses a ton of money because he decided to play in a bowl game. And it's not like, you know, it's not like I look at those two players. I can't look at Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette and say, you guys are just wrong for not playing in your bowl games, because both of them are going to be NFL draft picks. And that story has picked up a lot of steam today. I saw just a short time ago, Ezekiel Elliott said, I'd give anything to play in Scarlet and Gray again. That's all great. You can say that now. You're winning and you've got paychecks coming in. You're running back. There's only so many hits you can take. I don't know if the NFL scouts are going to look at these two and say, wow, they didn't play in the bowl game. We're not going to give them the highest draft grade. I don't know that. But I think this morning to sit here and be critical of Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette for passing on bowl games is just flat wrong. So that's on my mind with the Cardinals as well. Paula Bovin joins us now, AZ Central Sports columnist. We were at Paula's home on Saturday night. It's a beautiful home. My wife and I were. And Paula's mother makes lasagna, and every year Paula has this lasagna party. And the lasagna was to die for, except the problem was there just wasn't enough of it. People were cutting in line and jacking it before I could get to it till the end, where I just kind of had to hover over it. And Paula thought I was at a buffet being an ogre. So thanks.
It was really funny though, Brad, because I noticed there was an elderly woman at the party.
Yes.
She also was Italian, who kept cutting you. She really did keep cutting in front of you. She was about 4 feet tall.
Yes. And then she looked up at me like, screw you, I'm getting my lasagna. You know, what was I supposed to do? Like, hey, lady, I'm in line. You know?
Yeah, you were very kind. It could have turned into an ugly scene, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was about ready to go low post on her, you know, down in the low block and just elbow her out of the way. Give me some of that. So
exactly.
So your mom made all that, yes?
The two of us made it together.
The two of you made it together. And mom is in her 80s and she's still making lasagna with daughter. And you're still putting this party on. That's great. That is...
It's a holiday tradition, and you know, doing the you make the noodles homemade. That's the key. Super thin, and that's the secret.
Well,
but it's fun. It's a fun tradition.
We're of the opinion that that should be more than just a once a year tradition. Like, I don't know, every month, come by the studio, something like that. All right, on to more serious matters. The football team here stinks. The pro football team's no good. The college teams were horrid. This has just been the most dreadful year of football that I can recall in Arizona, and I don't know what to do to get us out of it, because I'm looking at next year, and I don't see a whole lot of promise on yon horizon unless you do.
Well, no, it's pretty depressing. The one promise I do see, certainly related to the Cardinals, is Carson Palmer. And I know people have been down on him, but... I mean, I thought a lot of the game he looked terrific yesterday, and I think we've learned more as the season unfolded how much any offensive issues, for the most part, were about receivers dropping passes, not running the right routes, were about a makeshift offensive line and injuries. And Palmer sounded like a guy who planned to come back after the game yesterday, so I think that's the positive, because if you can fix other things, if you have a solid, decent quarterback, you're going to be okay.
J.J. Nelson running down the sideline, having two guys chasing him in his hands, in full step, doink. Like that play, that one play, along with Justin Bethel not understanding where to line up, not once, but twice, actually, that's a microcosm of the season. Here is the highlight film of Team Nothing. and here's these two plays. I really think that's how it should play out. The Arizona Cardinals in 2016 were touting being all or nothing. Well, they ended up being team nothing, and here's why. Drop ball. Like yesterday's game, there were so many plays that just summed up what had gone on this year.
Well, it's so true, and, you know, it's that frustration. You see it all the time, too, that teams are in love with track guys, and I get that because they can, you know, outrun the coverage, but at some point, those kind of things happen. So I thought that was one of those issues yesterday. And then the Bethel thing, I mean, it's a neutral zone. Those are things you got to know, and it made me think of comments that Bruce Arians made not too long ago you know, when he was kind of pointing the finger at players, which I know he does a lot, but of guys not being accountable, not doing their job. I mean, that's stuff you've got to know. And so, those were really, you're right, Brad, great examples of sort of what's gone wrong with this team this season. And I think a lot of people are frustrated, too. And I think even my colleague Dan Bickley addressed it with sort of how they defensively used Peterson. And, I mean, it even sounded like Sean Payton was surprised after the game that the matchups weren't what he thought they'd be. So a lot of questions after that game, and understandably a lot of frustration.
Yeah, what was it, Bruce Arians' failure in progress for Justin Bethel?
Yeah.
Either nothing in 64 font type or failure in progress. I mean, either one of those is just fine for the highlight film. But
I forgot about the failure in progress comment, Brad. It makes you wonder if, like, that's just a continuing theme that Bethel just doesn't get it, or is he starting to, you know, was he feeling the pressure and his mind not working right? I don't know. It's a mess, no question.
Well, look, I'm gonna look at us a little bit here because we write the nice story about Justin Bethel coming from a small school and what a surprise it is that he comes here. And yes, he makes all the special teams, but now when he's supposed to turn the corner and the team's supposedly got it figured out at corner, he can't do it. Then they draft Brandon Williams, and well, Brandon Williams is going to be the guy, and he starts the season, and then as the season progresses, we never see him again. And, you know, we make a big deal about how this corner situation has been settled. I'm not throwing all of us in it, but to a large extent, especially on the television side, just blowing up this all or nothing thing and then saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe what happened. No, you guys are the ones that, like, I don't know, turn this into like they're rock stars. They're not. They're just a football team that's not any good. They're like three games better than the Bears this year. That's how bad it is in Arizona. So when it's bad, then please point out how bad it's been. Not just kind of, sort of. This is just the worst. Makes me sick.
You know, it is bad. But I will say, and I've heard a lot of people kind of jump on that all or nothing bandwagon of like they just overplayed it.
Yes.
I get that, but part of it being overplayed is the world we live in today. Yeah, they tweeted about it a lot, but then things get retweeted and people write articles about it and it snowballs. And so, you know, what are you going to tell them? Don't tweet about it. Don't let them know it's happening. Don't have this red carpet thing. I mean, it was kind of a fun thing for them. And I don't have a big problem with how they played it, because I think how intense the promotion of it and coverage of it was, I think has to do in part with just this world we live in, this news cycle we live in where things are just blown up and retweeted and everybody runs with it and things like that. So I don't know. I think that bothers me less than most people.
All right, so then let's move over to the basketball end of things. Is there any reason for optimism in what's going on here? We have a Final Four here in March, and I know you're going to be covering it. And I would like to think that the team in Tucson would be a part of it. I don't see that being the case this year. I know the team in Tempe is not going to be there. And the team over at GCU is a year away, and they're a long ways away from being that type of team. So I guess I don't have any optimism there, or should I?
No, I think it's tough with just some of the things that Arizona has dealt with as far as injuries and the depth and things like that. Now, I will say in recent years, Sean Miller has been pretty darn good about getting his team to peak at the right time.
Right.
So I would never rule them out. But I think depth is just such an issue with this team and, you know, everything else they dealt with, suspensions or whatever. I think it's going to be tough. But, that doesn't make me feel bad at all about the Final Four, because I think it's going to be such a great event. There's some great storylines this year. You got the great powers, but you got a team like Gonzaga mean, they look as good as anybody right now when I watch them. You got UCLA playing well, a lot of interest in what's happening in the Pac-12. So I'm excited for it. Maybe it helps overshadow some of the crappy stuff going on in town with our sports team.
Yeah, I mean, I could get into the baseball team, but I don't think there's anything there in 2017. I could get into the hockey team. There's nothing there in 2017. I can get into the NBA team. I don't think there's anything there in 2017. So I'm just hoping for the surprises. And maybe that's why there's been this great bit of media run on Grand Canyon and their fans and playing big teams and all that stuff. On the football end of things, on the college end, so there's a story in the news cycle today of Christian McCaffrey of Stanford and Leonard Fournette of LSU, both saying they are not going to play in their team's bowl games. Now, Fournette is dinged up and hurt, but this is clearly for McCaffrey saving himself for the NFL draft. Do you have a problem with this? I do not, of players walking out on bowl games, not playing.
Well, I'm going to actually agree with you on this one, Brad. You know, when I heard this story, I kept thinking back, and I cannot remember who the player was. I think it was the Notre Dame guy.
Jalen Smith, the linebacker.
Jalen Smith, yeah.
The linebacker.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't he get hurt in a bowl game? I remember them talking about this in the draft, and it dropped his draft stock. There is too much at stake for these college kids as far as their futures. I mean, you know, the money that the NFL pays is their life. I mean, it's, you know, obviously it can be just short term if they only survive a couple of years, but it is a big deal and the stakes are too high. And, you know, the other part of the storyline is I've seen college coaches step away from bowl games to get prepared for their next job. I mean, it's kind of hypocritical, I think, to critique or criticize players for doing it. So I'm sorry, it's just the system we're in, the world we're in now. If I had a son and he had that opportunity, I'd have no problem with him pulling out of a bowl game.
Well, I'm going to stick with college football, but go back to the Cardinals here. So you talked briefly about how Carson Palmer has looked good to you this year. Are you now on the idea that addressing quarterback this offseason is not something that you believe is atop the list? I am of the opinion that it is atop the list. I could see a Dak Prescott, Tony Romo here situation actually kind of like it. Where are you at on this?
No, I mean, despite my high opinion of Carson Palmer, I also know he's, you know, he's this close to not playing again, an injury. His abilities may take a drastic drop for the worse. We've seen that happen with quarterbacks of a certain age. So I think you've got to get somebody, you have to have somebody ready beyond a rookie, because it's very hard for a rookie to step in. And there's a lot of good, I shouldn't say a lot of good, but there's a lot of names out there of guys that could be available via free agency or trade. And I think this is an attractive option for them, because while Palmer may still play next year, I'm doubtful he'll play much beyond after that. And for a guy who's 27 or 28 who wants to play in this league, I don't know if a Tony Romo is the answer. I know that name's circulating a lot. But somebody a little younger, you know, I think there could be a great opportunity. For a while, I used to think they could just fill that need in the draft, but it hasn't worked for them. They haven't made the right picks in the draft as far as quarterbacks. So I think they need to get someone with a little bit of experience who could step right in. I agree with you. It should be a priority in the offseason.
Stay well. Appreciate the time and the lasagna. Thank you.
You're welcome, Brad.
See ya. There's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. We're going to talk about some other quarterbacks, including a former Sun Devil who had a bad weekend, and a couple other things in the news cycle. We'll do that after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Wanted to note here about Christian McCaffrey before we get out of here. He accounted for 45% of Stanford's offensive touches the past two seasons. So there is that side where David Shaw now has to find a way to replace 45% of his offense. I'm sure that those of you on the Stanford side are saying this really isn't fair. The Suns are in action tonight. They play Minnesota. Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine. It's a really talented group there with the Timberwolves. That is tonight. And the Coyotes play tonight. They play against Calgary. That's at home. There's some college basketball tomorrow with ASU and Creighton. And New Mexico plays U of A tomorrow in Tucson. New Mexico has Dane Kuiper, right? Former Corona del Sol Aztec.
Yes.
I don't know if he's playing much.
He is.
Is he?
Yeah, he scored 14 points the other night, I think.
That's a good little story. That's tomorrow in Tucson. I liked let me get over on a couple football things. So I liked what Ezekiel Elliott did. And I'm on the, for full disclosure, I'm on the Salvation Army Advisory Board here in Phoenix. And they do great work. And every year I get involved in helping them out. And through the years, whatever I can do to help Salvation Army out, I do. So when he jumped into the barrel last night, into the kettle, so to speak, I like this. I like this a lot. And now people were mad. This is his touchdown celebration. People were mad that this happened. That the big bad NFL, the no fun league. No, the referees get graded. So if they don't call this, if they're like, oh, that's cute, that is not excessive celebration. No, this is a rule in the book. Whether I like the fact that they call in sportsmanlike on this or not, doesn't matter. It's in the book. And so as a referee, you can't just let it go by the wayside. This is above them where it's like, come on, guys, above the referees, please. Take away the excessive celebration as a penalty. I just don't see that as anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. It's going to get gobs of money for the Army today. I'm sure of that. And then there's Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler is a $72 million mistake right now in Houston. I hope he pulls out of it. I do. But for Brock Osweiler to play as poorly as he did again yesterday for the Texans, and for them to have to replace him with Tom Savage, who played well enough. So Osweiler gets pulled yesterday, doesn't finish the game. He wasn't happy about it. No player should be happy about it. But now you have that situation as well down in Houston, where former Sun Devil not getting the job done, plain and simple. Plain and simple. He's just been a – I think of all of the free agents and all the movement in the offseason, if we were to talk about – the one that is not panned out. You could use the word bust, but I think that's a little harsh here. He's just a year into it. Brock Osweiler would have to be number one. But then you have the Broncos on the other side of the street where they're not playing well. And there's some stories this morning that the Broncos had to have fights broken up in the locker room. Gary Kubiak had to break up a locker room fight between defensive backs and offensive linemen that escalated when asked if anyone would like to address the team after the 16-3 loss of New England Patriots. Broncos left tackle relative newcomer Russell Okung had volunteered to speak, but was shot down by objections of cornerback Aqib Talib. Yelling between the two groups erupted, according to the NFL.com report, cited sources, pretty much your classic offense versus defense divide. So this is in Denver, of course, where everybody should be frustrated. The two teams that have been in the Super Bowl, not looking very much like Super Bowl teams this year.
Speaking of frustrated, yeah. Did you happen to catch Mark Ingram on the sidelines late in the game yesterday? I'm amazed we got through the whole show and that was not brought up.
I had it in my notes, you know, that's one of those where has it been verified that he was upset because of the clause in his contract, or is it just something that people are speculating about, which is why I didn't bring it up.
So the backstory is Mark Ingram did not get the ball near the goal line towards the end of the game. He approached Sean Payton about the situation. Everyone, including Chris Myers and the whole Fox
Rondé
crew,
Barber,
was wondering what exactly was going on. And then on Twitter, someone put, oh, he had a $100,000 bonus if he scores X amount of touchdowns or something. And that's why after a touchdown, you see Mark Ingram on the sidelines pouting and pointing fingers at the coaching staff. So good stuff. And in a game they ended up winning. So
But the key there is someone on Twitter put it up.
True.
So is it true? That's why I held off on it. That's just me. I mean, it'd be fun to talk about. If that was really the case, if he's really upset about it, yeah, I could do that. I'll do that right now. No, we shouldn't be upset about it. Would we be upset about it? I don't know. Is a guy like Mark Ingram hurting for an extra $100,000? I don't know that. He's got 2 weeks left in the season. To think that guys don't know what their incentives are, no, that's business. The NFL, or pro sports in general, let's just use NFL, 53 islands, 53 corporations, all within one locker room. That's just how it is. If you can bring them all together, good luck with that. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out at sports360.com. We're Arizona-centric. High school, college, pro college, high school makes no difference to us. Our TV show on Fox Sports Arizona. Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays gets many, many airings. We appreciate their support. Have a great day.